Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter has nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Welcome to ENN on a Monday evening. I'd like to start off by saying good evening to Michael.
Zonker.
And then I'd like to say good evening to Don.
Ah!
I'd like to say good evening to Michael one more time.
Why?
And then I'd like to say good evening to Don.
Swap aside!
Guys, parts 3 and 4 of The Last Dance aired last night.
Okay.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep, and it focused a lot on Dennis Rodman and Jason Hare, the director, was on the Jalen and Jacoby pod that they put out right after each episode. And he talked about how Rodman really needed Jordan in his life.
Dennis, like a crazy kid, needed someone to tell him what to do and where to be. So, yeah, he's going to be nuts. He's going to go crazy, but he's going to be home by dinner. And he just needs a figure of authority. And for Dennis, Michael was that guy. So then when Scotty comes back, like Dennis says, we were like the three amigos and I was the third wheel. Well, the three amigos got along a lot better than Michael, Scotty, and Dennis did, because Dennis was kind of an outcast on that team. So he just kind of went off the rails. He's an emotionally fragile guy. I think that those tattoos and the piercings and all that, I think that's all armor. I think that Dennis is a lot softer underneath.
You know, Bill Simmons.
I was about, you know what?
You have that?
I was about to
go for it, baby.
Say it. No, you can do it, but I was about to add that because he's been trending all day.
Yeah.
Because Bill put up a tweet today promoting his podcast episode with Russillo, and he said, oh, wait, did he get rid of it?
No, I got it.
Oh, crucial question that started today's pod. Why have we pretended for the past 25 years that Dennis Rodman was actually interesting? And he has been getting roasted for hours.
And then he goes on, Dennis Rodman is not an interesting person, never has been, never will be.
I think I have not heard the podcast. My guess is he feels that Dennis's weirdness is contrived. Although I got to say, Michael, from if you watched last night or didn't watch last night, I think it's pretty hard to argue he's an uninteresting guy.
You cannot like him. And let's just say you thought it was contrived, all right, which I guess is a fair opinion, right? Just trying to get attention, get people to talk about him. How can you say somebody is uninteresting when you've dated Madonna and Carmen Electra? No matter how many. How
end of story. Stop right
that.
There. Don't even mention greatest rebounder ever. Just stop right there. Madonna and Carmen Electra. Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting to me.
By the way, Carmen Electra.
Yeah.
Not many people could look better 22 years later than she did back then. I mean,
it's
not
a smoke show.
Not to be a. But I mean, she looked great.
Barstool Sports, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but their post describing this news, Bill Simmons says Dennis Rodman wasn't interesting. I assume they're trolling Bill here. The split picture they have of Simmons and Rodman is Rodman wearing a wedding dress and full makeup as like a woman, and Bill Simmons wearing the most plain blazer in history.
Listen, I can't speak for Bill Simmons. I have no idea what he meant by that. But just because you're outrageous doesn't mean you're interesting. You could sit down maybe and talk to Dennis Rodman and have there's nothing that would interest anybody. He wouldn't have any important takes on the world at large.
But
so
of all the nights,
he could be outrageous and not be interesting.
But does he mean an interesting guy to have a conversation with? Because I've never had a conversation with him. But when you talk about the fact that he's the greatest rebounder in history, that I'll take it a step further. to be an athlete in America at the time that he was and do the things that he did to play with sort of like gender fluidity, like that was not done. Like that alone. So I'm going to keep stopping on these individual things. The gender fluidity role that he was playing, the wedding dress, the fingernail polish, the hair color, everything he did, never done before. Contrived? I don't know, but still interesting. How about his friendship with Kim Jong-un?
Right.
I mean, what?
That's interesting.
What could you be talking about that he's... what about when he was in the middle of his NBA career and he went to WCW and wrestled in full wrestling matches in the prime of wrestling and then would fly back to be on the best team in basketball? He's a bizarre dude, and I maybe he meant to have a conversation with, but Michael, don't you think it's a funny day to point out he's not interesting when the entire country just sat and watched a full episode on Dennis Rodman and was enthralled?
Yeah, but you know what? It's a hot take, and I will say this. Again, not defending Bill Simmons. He doesn't need my defense. He just bought a $19 million home. He's doing fine. I have met and had conversations with athletes that are mega famous, and you're bored to tears. They have nothing to say. They have no depth whatsoever. So maybe that's what he means. So that doesn't mean they're bad guys. And the average fan will go, oh, I can't wait to meet blank blank. And you look at him and go, don't meet him. He's not that interesting.
But
there are some really fascinatingly famous people that are colossal bores that have no interest in anything.
But I don't think that's what he meant even.
I don't know what he means. I'm just saying that there are famous people that aren't interesting.
Yeah, but would you say that Odell Beckham Jr. is uninteresting?
I don't know. I've never had a conversation with him except on the show.
We had conversations with him on the show, and I wanted to pull my eyeballs out. I mean, I thought it was awful radio. He gave you nothing. He seemed very uninteresting to me, but we know better. All right, so he's a bad interview. Maybe he's introverted. But his story, the man itself, of the things that he's done and he's been involved in, the people that he's known, the people around him, to take that kind of tact, like there's nothing interesting about him. Well, I found that episode riveting of all the things that went on.
Okay, this is, tell me if I shouldn't retweet it and at Bill Simmons, because I think it's that funny and I think he doesn't take himself that seriously. You have to sort of know Simmons' style to appreciate why this is funny. Have you guys read much Simmons?
Yeah,
I think he's fascinating. He's Bill interesting to me.
Bill Simmons. Dennis Rodman is not an interesting person. Never has been. Never will be. Also, Bill Simmons, please read my 12,000-word column about the one time me, J-Bug, and Sully played the Addams Family slot machine in Vegas and talked about the White Shadow. I mean, it is true. Bill Simmons will write 9,000 words about what him, Slimmy, and Jack used to think when they watched Bill Walton play in 1986. It's all in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, but when he writes that, he's fascinating. He's interesting. You do read it.
I always stopped after about 7,000 words.
Oh, so you couldn't give him the other 2,000?
No, it was too much. Bill is an incredible writer and an amazing talent, and he changed the internet and sports as we know it. It's the Bill Simmons chapter. I give him every bit of credit, and I personally like him. But I always wondered how he could be that good and never learn to edit his articles down a bit.
You didn't have to. That's the beauty of the internet.
But it, no,
newspaper,
but,
you have to edit.
But see, the thing is, now this is like the Pistons-Bulls argument. As someone who enjoys writing and is pretty decent at writing a concise article, why not? You know how much better it is to write a concise article?
It's
harder.
Who wants
it to be 26 pages?
I'll tell you what. So, like, the last game story I ever wrote for the Daily News before I got the Yankee gig was Game 7 of the 1991 World Series, which was one of the greatest games I'd ever been to. And I wrote a 4,000-word story, which is just ridiculous.
That's insane what you did.
And
you should have been fired on the spot.
Well, you know what happens, you know, when you're putting a newspaper together and you're up against the deadline, 3,200 words ended up on the floor. I wish I had the room that Bill Simmons had, because the 3,200 that never made the paper, oh, brilliant. I'd be a Pulitzer Prize winner right now.
If you went back and read that, you'd be disgusted with those 3,200 words.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, you would.
You watch that game, that's one of the great games you'll ever see.
What game? Hold on, what game was it?
When Jack Morris pitched 10 innings and they won.
Unbelievable game.
When Gene Larkin hit the sack fly, it was an unbelievable game.
What year was it?
91.
Nothing happened to the Yankees in 1991 that deserved 4,000 words. Nothing.
This was the World Series in 2000, the Game 7 of the World Series between the Twins and the Braves.
Oh,
wake
sorry,
up.
Sorry. I thought it was Yankees. I apologize. Still didn't need 4,000 words.
It was an amazing game. One of the greatest games I ever saw.
Did a player like die in center field?
But
six
I do
players
believe,
got shot. Yes.
Okay, fine. Yeah. It deserves 4,000 words.
I and do that believe ended up on the floor.
That I guess what Peter's trying to say, or at least what I'm taking from Peter is that there takes a certain level of conceit to write something that long, as if it's like, I am so interesting that no matter how long I write this, that people will stick and read it the entire way. Like, you can, even if it's on a great subject, Michael, sometimes it just, can you shorten this up a little bit?
Dro just tweeted at us.
Yeah, this is important.
But you know, it's in the Sims entire pod. Russillo said he didn't believe that Rodman's persona or story wasn't interesting. Simmons somewhat agreed, but did push back a bit.
By the way, he corrected it, though. Was interesting. So it was Russillo who said he didn't think Rodman's persona story was interesting, and Simmons somewhat agreed, but did push back. And then, of course, Simmons just tweeted it as a troll, and now no one will listen. They'll just argue what he said and think that those are Bill's words. But he doesn't care. Bill doesn't mind.
Incarcerated Bob just sent me a DM. He said, Rodman's father had 29 kids. Guy's been through it. I'm sure he's got interesting stories.
I forgot about that, too. I mean, come on. Anyways, either way, shout out to Simmons and Russillo. Let's keep it moving.
How about Madonna seeing him in San Antonio? He's cute. Boom, they start a relationship.
I mean, listen, it was Madonna, her prime.
That was prime Madonna.
Now, Isaiah Thomas has been catching it. He's also been doing a lot of media, kind of enjoying the moment. And the funny thing here is, so Isaiah Thomas obviously got sort of portrayed in a not so great light last night after the Bulls finally dethroned the Pistons, and Isaiah and the Pistons just walked off the court without shaking hands. Isaiah Thomas went on a lot of things today, but our very own Barton Hahn, and he talked about the fact that he deserved to be on the Dream Team in spite of what happened with the Bulls.
And the criteria for making the team was supposedly how many championships you had won, your contribution to the game. And at that point in time, three people who had won the most championships were Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and myself. Jordan had just won one championship. I was, in 1980, I was on the Olympic team that was boycotted because Russia invaded Afghanistan. In 1980, I was selected as the USA Male Athlete of the Year. And so I thought for sure that I would have the criteria to pass the test and meet all the requirements that they said that you needed to be on the Olympic team. Now, if I'm finding out, you know, years later, that the reason that I was not on the team is because we walked past the Bulls and didn't shake their hands, then I'm a little disappointed by that.
Now, can you buy this, Peter, at all? Is there any part of this that you could buy that it's 2020 and this is the first time that Isaiah Thomas has kind of intimated that he's never known that that's what kept him off the Olympic team? Michael Jordan's hatred of him? This is the first time? That's got to be totally disingenuous. Isaiah's a pretty smart guy, pretty shrewd. He knows that Jordan kept him off that team.
Right.
There's been books written about it.
He's playing the role of victim.
And real quick, correct me if I'm wrong.
Wrong.
Wasn't it supposedly Isaiah Thomas that came up with the plan to freeze out Michael Jordan at the 85 All-Star game?
Yes.
So now
he's not the innocent that he portrays himself out to be.
And by the way, I like Isaiah. Okay, I like you. I like him. Seen him around. Good guy. I like his kids. This isn't a personal thing. It's a basketball thing. But come on, he's known about all of this, and he's leaning into it all. By the way, guys, and doing all the media that's coming his way today. But the idea that he didn't know that those issues were potentially part of what led to him not being on the Dream Team, or furthermore, the fact that he just hadn't been a good guy to Jordan going all the way back at least to 1985 at the All-Star game. I don't know if there's any weird, I don't know, Indiana, North Carolina thing before that, but going all the way back to 85, he wasn't really cool to Jordan. Here comes the 92 Dream Team. Michael has surpassed Bird and Magic. He's the number one player in the world. He calls all the shots, and now you're ass out. Michael, it seems like just sort of the best form of karma imaginable.
You reap what you sow. I mean, that's all there is to it, right? Reap what you sow. It's just, it's ridiculous how he could be so in the dark about this. Here's the thing about Isaiah, okay? Because I dealt with him a lot when he was a Nick GM. His face and the way he conducts himself is angelic. He's got
his voice tone in that interview. Clip.
Yeah, he's a beautiful persona. He's an assassin.
I know.
He was an assassin as a player. That's why he didn't want Jordan to get the ball in the all. He was mean spirited on a mean spirited team, but the persona was of this pristine, beautiful person.
I know, but
he's certainly not like that.
But you do realize that there's a whole new audience that's being introduced to this.
Yeah.
Right. So Jordan stands alone, but everybody like around it, yeah, there's people that are watching that are under 30 that have no recollection of any of that. So I think just Isaiah's got a different room in which to kind of play the victim.
Well, maybe he could rewrite his history by, you know, as Peter said, I don't think he turned down an interview today. But to act, I mean, that is so disingenuous to find out all these years later. That's the reason that
there's a
litany of reasons. The All-Star game situation, the fact that your team tried to physically decapitate Michael Jordan and then you didn't shake hands. It's a litany of things. Jordan probably hated his gut. Not probably, he does. He called him an a-hole yesterday.
Well, now I feel bad. Now there's shrapnel being caught by others. Isaiah Thomas, the former Boston Celtic, I think most recently Washington Wizard, has been getting hate comments all day.
Oh, come on.
On Twitter. That's how smart people are.
Yeah.
They're ripping an Isaiah Thomas who's not the Isaiah Thomas, who I wonder if he was even born. Well, he was born. It's probably 3 or 4 at that time.
Barely.
No. That was the first of the championships. He wasn't even born. And they're ripping this guy. Twitter freaks are freaks. I'm telling you. Let me go on Twitter, be a tough guy. Let me flex and threaten somebody who had nothing to do with it.
Tony Kukoc had some interesting thoughts.
Tell us.
He spoke about Jerry Krause and said, "I wish Jerry were here to say his part of the story. It's easy to like Michael and Scotty and Dennis and Phil, and I like them all. I love them. Scotty was the ultimate team player. Michael will always, to me, be the best player ever. He changed the game. He made it global. Every player today should tip their hat to him. But you have to hear the other side. Jerry built the 6 champions. You have to give him credit."
I agree. The one part of the 2 episodes yesterday that made me sad, when they beat the Pistons, right, and they go on to play the Lakers in the championship, while they're flying from Detroit to Chicago, seeing Jerry dance. He just didn't fit. That was his problem. Physically, he didn't fit with some of the most physically fit people on earth. And I think that the fact that he got ostracized by them and made fun of, I think that was the reason he broke it all up. If you won't bring me into your club, I'm breaking up the club.
But what general manager
does
fit?
That's probably it.
But I mean, there are general managers that, I mean...
Well, they're former players, of course.
Yeah, Jerry doesn't look anything like somebody that would be an athlete or...
But that does... They were cruel to him.
Yes, they were.
They were. And you could say what you want about his ego and breaking it up and all, but they were cruel, and I'm sure that fed into his ego. I'll have the last laugh. I'll be the one standing here winning championships when all these guys are gone.
And you know what's funny, though? He didn't have the last laugh because Jerry Reinsdorf allowed him to break the team up, and he could never build another team that even approximated that. And, I think before the 2 episodes that came out, I think it was part of the episode. Jerry didn't want to pay $80 million. If to keep that team together, he would have had to pay $80 million to Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman. He wanted no part of that. They couldn't have made money with that kind of payroll. That's why he allowed Krause to break it up. 6 championships, that's cool. We gave the city enough. I drove the value of this franchise up to like a level I never could have imagined. No way was he paying that kind of money for that.
And I'm sure that there was a lot of pressure that Krause was getting from Reinsdorf. And now the story, everybody can disassociate themselves with it and say, oh, it was all Jerry. Jerry was the one that forced it. Well, what about Reinsdorf? I'm sure he was the one writing the check saying, so we're going to have to slow our roll here, guys. We're going to have to start making some very difficult decisions. because we can't continue to pay everybody this kind of money.
Speaking of difficult decisions, Don, the word is that NBA facilities may be opening soon. Let's hear from our very own Adrian Wojnarowski.
They would prefer that a player would be in one of their own facilities, which they can keep clean, that they can keep much safer, you know, than a public, you know, fitness center. And they wanted to avoid players doing that. And that was part of it here. But the harder part, Hannah, is going to be markets where players and organizations are not going to be able to go into their own facilities. I was told the league used the term, you know, alternate plans, that they'll work with those teams for alternate arrangements, I should say. And what that's going to look like is going to be really, I think, a complex rollout here over the next couple weeks for the league and for teams.
And this is on the heels over the weekend, if you read Larry Brooks's column, and there was even reports back on Friday about the NHL doing the same thing and actually putting a date of May 15th as a time where certain teams have told their players be ready to come back. So I think these commissioners are working in unison, and I think you're going to start to see, especially with the leniency in Colorado, and other states are starting to follow suit. Is it possible, just for sake of argument, can the Nuggets and the Avalanche say, tell their players, come back? People are able to bowl. People are able to go out and get their hair cut. Come back. Self-quarantine in your own home here in Colorado and come to the facility and practice and work out. So I think you're going to start, as we get closer to that date, even New York, guys, has May 15th as a possible deadline. Now, I don't think New York City would fall into that.
No.
But you could see the Finger Lakes, the North Country, as Governor Cuomo was saying today, where they seem to have things relatively in control, that you're going to start to see these things to pop up. And I think some teams are going to try to take advantage, get everybody back. The NHL and the NBA have players overseas. Bring them back into the country and get them ready for the possibility of maybe starting some things up again when we get to June.
The virtual draft was successful for our company, guys.
Big time.
55 million viewers in all. The average was 15.6 million viewers on round one, 8 million, two and three on Friday, and then Saturday's coverage averaged 4 million viewers. So it crushed. There were more than 600 camera feeds. 85 draft prospects had cameras. 32 coaches and general managers, as well as fans and college coaches. Unbelievable job all around. Props
now,
to everyone.
Think about this. March 11th, when everything went down, you have to figure that our company had the original plan for the draft in place, right? Vegas, red carpet, hundreds of thousands of fans in Vegas, flying all of the potential draft picks into Vegas, teams all at their facilities, right? And then they put off this in a month, right? In 5 weeks or so, doing something that they had never done before, that they couldn't possibly be prepared to do in March, and accomplish that. That's pretty
unbelievable.
And can we also, give some credit where credit is due, because this guy is always a punching bag, and so many people criticize Roger Goodell for insisting that the draft go on. GMs didn't want to do it. Even Adam Schefter said, you know, with the carnage going on in the streets, it was a pitch-perfect decision, and it was handled in a pitch-perfect way. The country obviously was yearning for this sort of entertainment. It didn't hurt anybody. It didn't put anybody in harm's way. It didn't disrespect anybody. I think Goodell made the right decision to have the draft go off the way it was supposed to go off. So good for him.
And I think we have to remember this whenever we're talking about things that happen in the future with this pandemic. I don't know if they could have been as successful if the draft was March 23rd instead of April 23rd. Because look where we were on March 23rd. Would ABC want to interrupt their coverage of what was going on to air the draft? Then we flattened the curve in a lot of places. In some places, we seem to be on the decline. the atmosphere was different, and I think it made it more receptive. Michael, I don't know how receptive it would have been on March 23rd, but on March 23rd was when they were talking about moving ahead with the draft, and it sounded outrageous, and the comments about the carnage in the streets. So when we talk about opening up the other sports, where will we be in May, in June? You know, maybe things can get better to where some of the ideas that seem outlandish now may not be so outlandish when they're executed.
It's exactly right. Don, time, depending on what's happened, time is always the thing. And sometimes the way something's viewed one day is viewed totally different in 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years.
So baseball, you're right. Baseball playing right now, it seems outrageous, but in a month?
It might not. You're right, 100%
right. Did you see that ESPN is going to buy the rights right now for the Korean Baseball League, which is playing?
Really?
Yeah, they're going to start running Korean baseball games.
Love it. I'm a big fan. Now, remember when Taysom Hill, or as Mike calls him, Tayshaun Hall, was was looking to become...
Imagine if I unearth every one of your mistakes. The most effective quarterback was Tayshaun Hall.
And do you remember when Tayshaun Hall was looking to become a starter?
Yeah, sure.
Well, he has signed a deal to remain with the Saints through 2021. Simultaneously, the Saints are working on a deal with Jameis Winston, or as I called him, Jamison Winston.
See, so, Michael, he admits his mistakes.
See?
That's because I brought it up.
So I guess it would put Taysom back in the role he's always played, a multi-purpose sort of backslash quarterback, and Winston is the actual backup now, replacing Teddy Bridgewater, who's off to Carolina. Oh, man. Speaking of Carolina, not to disrespect Joe Judge, but I saw an interview with Matt Rhule during the draft. Oh, I get why people wanted Matt Rhule.
I think we're going to have Joe Judge on tomorrow.
Really?
Good. Yeah.
Then I'll save it for after we talk to him. By the way, the NFL says it would consider a later Super Bowl and also, get ready, guys, eliminating the Pro Bowl if the season is delayed. To which everyone replied, what? What's that? Oh, it's the random thing you do the week before the Super Bowl? Yeah, we don't care.
No, Joe Judge, by the way, is on 3:30 tomorrow.
Joe Judge?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get ready for some hard-nosed downhill questions.
Oh, I guess I didn't know if that was the end of ENN.
No, no, no. It's also, Don, it's also the end of ENN.
Okay.
Wow.
I was going to say, RJ, jumping the gun there, just ending.
No, it was news. Rumbling. It was breaking news.
Right.
That,
but and also in defense of Joe Judge, as far as where he was, apparently the story was he thought he was going to be home in Massachusetts. And I guess last minute change was to be here, and that's why he
said. And there, you know why the change, drab. Right? His internet wasn't working right in Massachusetts. Right. He said, I can't have this go out. So he went, I guess he has a small apartment near the Giant facility.
So I know we were having some fun with him the other day, but I guess that explains why there wasn't much going on there, because I guess that wasn't where it was supposed to be in the first place.
Downhill internet.
Can I give you one bit of good news when it comes, or potential good news when it comes to COVID-19?
Please.
Oh, this is rare because you have zero since this started.
So I was talking to somebody. I can't tell you who it was, but a guy with a background in epidemiology. I was talking to him 2 weekends ago. And I told the guys this, and he said to me, he said, I know for a fact there's something going on in England at Oxford. He said, I truly believe, again, big time person, I truly believe.
Everybody knows him.
That there, everybody knows him. Everybody listening to the show knows who he is, but you don't think of him in this way. That's all I'll say. He said, I sincerely believe that there will be a vaccine against this virus in September. I said, of 2021? He said, no, of 2020. I said, you're out of your mind. He goes, watch. So now I read this in the New York Times. Scientists at NIH's Rocky Mountain Lab, which is in Oxford, inoculated 6 monkeys with single doses of Oxford vaccine. The monkeys were then exposed to heavy quantities of the virus, exposure that had sickened other monkeys. But more than 28 days later, all 6 monkeys were healthy. And the story in the New York Times, in race for a coronavirus vaccine, an Oxford group leaps ahead. Could it be...
Could it be
that you could save the world, that the world could be saved? And it said that it's scientists at the Jenner Institute prepare for mass clinical trials. New tests show their vaccine to be effective in monkeys.
Well, miracle's a good thing. You just don't want it to be your plan A, as Brad Pitt said on Saturday.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.